What's up, guys? Week three of the NFL season is already here. We've kind of wrap up week two and what happened with all the injuries, losing CMC and Saquon for the year, how to fix that. Waivers have already processed, but hopefully you got some guys on your teams that can help make up that difference. We go through rapid fire, the good and the bad from last week, some notable injuries, and we'll leave DFS for a new format in the show that we'll explain later on. So keep listening. Tutty Talk. Let's roll.
This is Darren Waller, and you're listening to the Tutty Talk Podcast.
Streaming from beautiful Portland, Oregon, for all things fantasy football. This is the Tutty Talk Podcast.
Barkley with a burst. Barkley down the sideline. Saquon Barkley.
Jackson takes it himself. Look at him turn back and forth. Oh, he broke his ankles.
He did what? It's a C-Mac attack.
I'm really not into dreams anymore. Okay, I'm in the nightmare.
A lot of people ain't gonna be able to take that over and 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 over again.
You like that? You like that?
Here are your hosts, Bryce Wells.
I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna put you on blast.
Kevin Nelson.
It's a damn shame because Pete Carroll is wasting Russell Wilson, and there's nothing we can do about it.
And Chase Daskalos.
No. Lamar Jackson is going to be a top five quarterback.
What it do? What it do? Episode 28, Tutty Talk Podcast. Kevin, Bryce, and Chase. Week three of the NFL season is this week. We're recording this on September 23rd. Guys, what's up? Bryce, out in Portland, for the last time before we start doing shows at the Casa. What's up?
It's going well, yeah. Excuse me. Oof, rough start. Very excited to get back and recording underneath the same roof. That's gonna be much better for the podcast. We're gonna spice it up there. DFS has been going really well, doing well in cash and doing well in the Millie Maker. Even though I'm not winning the $1 million, I'm still pulling in, you know, $7-$8 every time. Happy about that. Been winning a little over 50% in cash too. So we're doing the right things here. Hopefully you guys are as well.
Chase, what's up?
What up? Yeah, played a really good cash lineup in a 50-50 out of 50. I finished third in my pool, so cashed that lineup. Had a good week of props too, and super excited for week three, especially Monday night. We're going to talk about that game later, but Chiefs, Baltimore, Mahomes versus Lamar. I cannot wait.
There are some crazy good games this week. Like the Sunday night game is Green Bay and New Orleans, and I would say that that's like the third most exciting game, and that might be in some people's mind game of the week. But a lot of good stuff to talk about on the show today. Let's get into the good and the bad, notable performances from week two. Week filled with injuries, which we'll leave for right after this, but we start with the good and we start with the QBs. It's Josh Allen, who went 24 of 35, 417 yards, four touchdowns, with four carries for 18 yards on the ground at Miami. Holy shit. I mean, this guy is balling out to start the year. I think he's the only quarterback. I can't remember since how long, but he's the most recent quarterback to throw for over 900 yards, nine touchdowns, no interceptions through his first two games in quite some time, with a lot of legends up there. So Josh Allen, if you have him in fantasy, you're certainly loving this. You're loving the impact it's had on Stephon Diggs. And Josh Allen shutting a lot of people up. We were haters to begin the season. I want to know where you guys stand on Josh Allen now after the first 2 weeks.
I owned Josh Allen at one point in Dynasty. I had him for not even a year, and I shipped him off real quickly because I got Russ busting that trade, and obviously that's working out. But Josh Allen is blowing everybody's minds, and it's for the better. I think this is great for fantasy. This is great for Stephon Diggs, who's another guy that people were actually picking up pretty late in drafts because people were scared about Josh Allen. And through 2 weeks, he's been phenomenal. And it's not like his schedule really gets that much tougher. You know, you see he gets the Rams, then he gets Vegas, then he gets Tennessee, KC, the Jets, New England, Seattle. I mean, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for him to continue to throw in this offense. And I kind of stated in the offseason that if he performs well this year, I can't see a world where the Bills don't re-sign him and keep him as their quarterback going forward with how talented the rest of their roster is. So I think it's fun to watch the Bills play this way. I think Stephon Diggs and John Brown are really underrated as a wide receiver core in the league, and they're proving that to everybody right now.
He was a long shot to be NFL MVP this year, and it was a good bet. I'm skeptical, though. He's played the Jets and Miami, but two of the worst teams in the NFL. He's got Tennessee, Kansas City, New England in the coming weeks. And then he finishes kind of towards the tail end of your fantasy season and in the fantasy playoffs. He finishes with the LA Chargers, the 49ers, who are now banged up, the Steelers, the Broncos, and the Patriots. And then week 17, which doesn't matter for fantasy football, he gets Miami. So he's facing all of these tough defenses right now. And I'm skeptical because he's playing out of his fucking mind. Mm-hmm. And this isn't something that we've seen before. And the accuracy still isn't there. He's number 31 in the NFL so far in 2 weeks in accuracy rating. The completion percentage is okay. He's number 10 in true completion percentage. That takes out drops. But just based on accuracy, we've seen the throws. It was week one. He had John Brown, I believe it was John Brown, wide open in the back of the end zone. It was a 7-yard throw, and he threw it into the fourth row. Like, that's still Josh Allen. And people think that, oh my God, all of a sudden he's super accurate now. No, his accuracy rating is still really low, and he's played the Jets in Miami.
Right. I could see this coming back down to earth. But the nice part about Josh Allen is you always have that rushing upside to lean on when things get weird in the passing game, which it certainly will, I think, against, you know, New England twice a year when we see that. Flip the script. Quarterback that bombed, absolutely bombed on Sunday in a game that I thought would be super high scoring against the Colts in Indy was Kirk Cousins. He was bad. 11 for 26, 113 yards through the air, 3 interceptions, a safety. He was sacked 3 times in the game, a rating of 15.9, a QBR of 9.4. This was abysmal for Kirk. The Vikings are worried. There's a lot of memes and designers putting Trevor Lawrence in a Vikings jersey with good reason after a performance like that.
I mean, I think I'm definitely worried about Kirk Cousins, but at the same time, you know, he had a decent week one. It was a high-scoring game against Green Bay, 43-34. He's just not throwing that much in these games, and this last game was, I think, kind of an outlier game for him. You know, he's eventually going to get Houston, Seattle, Atlanta, Green Bay, Detroit in 2 weeks, so in that order. And that's going to be good for him. That's kind of where I'm at with Kirk Cousins, is like, it's going to get better for him. I think this is a low point for him. So I think people are overreacting a bit with Kirk Cousins. I think it definitely is showing that they miss Stephon Diggs in this offense. And what's even weirder is, you know, it's not like Dalvin's blowing people away. I mean, he did pretty well in week one, but his performance in week two was about average, or what you at least expect his floor to be. So it's just an old-looking offense, you know. It feels very outdated, and I want to see more from it. And I think that we're going to see that. We just have to be patient. I have a question on here. I mean, do you think he's droppable at this point? I mean, you could play guys like Gardner Minshew, who is even almost safer than Kirk Cousins and still offers some upside. And I wouldn't hate you to play Gardner Minshew over Kirk Cousins. There's a number of quarterbacks I would rather play over Kirk Cousins. I would play Justin Herbert over Kirk Cousins this week. So that's just kind of where I'm at. Just be patient with him. I don't think if you drop him, someone's going to immediately rush to the waiver wire and pick him back up. You can always go back and get him. But yeah, big yikes for week two on Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, he's just been terrible. And it doesn't really add up either. Week one against Green Bay was a shootout. And then they got smashed by the Colts in week two, and somehow Kirk Cousins is number 28 in the league in attempts. So he has absolutely no volume. And then when he has thrown it, he's number 28 in fantasy points per dropback. So he's been fucking terrible. Efficiency-wise, he's been horrible. Number 26 in true completion percentage, and number 30 when he gets a clean pocket completion percentage. I don't know. The schedule that you said that he has coming up kind of makes you think, like, okay, hang on a little bit.
But yeah.
It's almost like they're missing a wide receiver. Like,
yeah.
Like they – is this Josh? Oh, that's Stephon Diggs. Okay.
Yeah.
On to running backs. stand in the NFC North are player of the week and pretty much everybody's player of the week in fantasy football. Last week was Aaron Jones, 18 carries for 168 yards, two touchdowns on the ground, four receptions for 68 yards and a touchdown. Did you see the like falling backwards diving catch he had as well? Aaron Jones is balling the fuck out in this offense. The AJ Dillon pick seemingly makes no sense, and nothing about that Packers draft made any sense. So why should we think that at the time AJ Dillon was going to take anything away from this guy who's just been on an absolute tear since the beginning of last season, a top fantasy asset last year, proving to be maybe the RB1 this year with the injuries that we saw over the weekend to CMC and Saquon. He's right up there with Zeke and Kamara for me. And where he was being drafted, I was going back and looking in drafts, third round, beginning of the fourth round for Aaron Jones. Everybody bought in on this. And I don't know if it was like a fantasy community thing that really started this up. Sure, the AJ Dillon, like I talked about, that makes moves the needle for sure on his value, but holy shit, it's just a well-oiled machine for Aaron Jones. The efficiency and the huge plays he's able to turn out. It's like this weird mix of like a Raheem Mostert and an Austin Eckler for me. I don't know. That's kind of what I see in his production and what he does in the PPR game for sure.
I like that little comp you have there with both those guys. That's pretty good. I'm a little nervous for week three, but really there's not that much to be nervous about. They get New Orleans. We all know how well New Orleans is against the run. But if Davante Adams isn't playing this week, it's just a more opportunity for Aaron Jones to be involved in the passing game. I think that makes him a really safe play, not only in seasonal, but you know when we're talking about cash, like that's going to be a good play, I think, this week if there aren't any other options. We'll talk about that more this Saturday. But, you know, yeah, he's a guy that was disrespected. People weren't buying into it. And at this point, AJ Dillon is nothing I'm ever going to be worried about if I'm an owner of Aaron Jones. There's no way AJ Dillon can do what Aaron Jones can do right now. And after New Orleans, he gets Atlanta, Tampa Bay, Houston, Minnesota, like outside of Tampa Bay a little bit. But like, I'm not really that worried. Like I said, he's so involved in the passing game. It creates such a safe floor for a guy like Aaron Jones. And if he's your RB2, which, as you pointed out, you know, where people were drafting him, he is people's RB2. And he's RB1 right now. And that's what's nuts. Like, if you have Aaron Jones and you were able to draft a guy like Josh Jacobs or somebody else, or Zeke, or fucking Zeke and Aaron Jones as your 1-2 punch, holy fuck, you're going to win your league this year. Like, I don't see any other way around it. Like, that's exactly what you're looking for. You're looking for these diamonds in the rough, which he wasn't even that bad of a player last year. So, I mean, obviously with the how many touchdowns he scored.
19, yeah.
Yeah, and it's looking like he's going to be close to that again. So I don't know how I let Aaron Jones slip because I don't own any of them in seasonal. So I kind of take some responsibility for not drafting him and hating on him a little bit. And I'll be the first to admit I was wrong in Aaron Jones, and it's kind of biting me in the ass.
So the two factors that played into Aaron Jones being drafted later and why everyone was a little skeptical on Aaron Jones is touchdown regression, which we talked about so many times, where he literally just for his workload, he scored too many touchdowns. And then the carry competition where Jamal Williams plays so far 41% of snaps. And then they spend a second round pick on 6'2", 245 AJ Dillon. Well, guess what? Through 2 weeks, there ain't no touchdown regression. Aaron Jones is number one in total touchdowns. And then for carry competition, he's continuously outproducing the workload that he receives. He's playing 49.6% of snaps. He's playing less than 50% of the snaps. That's 26th in the NFL for running backs. Jamal Williams, 41%. And then second round pick, AJ Dillon has 7 carries so far through 2 weeks, 8.5% of the snaps. He's not even seen the field. And what's also playing into that, why A.J. Dillon isn't on the field is really what I factored into A.J. Dillon doing at 6'2", 245 was being a goal line guy and getting red zone work. He has 0 red zone touches and 0 goal line touches through 2 weeks. Aaron Jones has 9 red zone touches and 2 goal line carries through 2 weeks. He's getting the red zone work. He's getting the goal line work. And I was completely wrong in Aaron Jones, and he's smashing right now.
Keeping up with the Jones. No, he's not keeping up with Jones. Ronald Jones is our bad running back this week.
And shocker.
It brings great joy for me to say this. And I mean, no offense to Ronald Jones, but 7 carries for 23 yards and a touchdown, 2 receptions for 4 yards. Up 14 a few minutes into the second quarter in plus territory. Tampa Bay moving the ball. Ronald Jones fumble on 1st and 10 on a fake screen. Draw play that really ended his day. And if you've ever seen Bruce Arians coach, this is just shit that he does. You fuck up one time, you turn the ball over type of thing. Unless you're a quarterback, your day is done. I have somebody that can come in and replace you. And holy mother nuggets, it's Leonard Fournette that replaces him. 12 carries for 103 yards and a touchdown. 4 receptions on 5 targets for 13 yards. And in Tom Brady's hype video post-game talking about their first win, the star of the show, Leonard Fournette, who rips off a big run to end Carolina's day for a touchdown. And this is perfect. This is why you drafted Leonard Fournette in the summer. And, you know, we talked about, yes, he is going to have more competition and things like that. And Ronald Jones is still their guy, blah, 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 blah. Ronald Jones does this. Ronald Jones fucks up. Ronald Jones isn't that good. You know who is good and was in a really shitty spot? Leonard Fournette. It's too good to be true. And you saw the offense kind of take off once Fournette got in the game. So Leonard Fournette is there to stay. He is a flex play until further notice. And probably will work up into your RB2 range come middle of the season. But the writing's on the wall for Ronald Jones. One more fuck up like this, and you know he's really going to be done. Is there still a little bit of competition? Of course, I see it. There's 2 starting caliber running backs there. But if you watched any of the game on Sunday, you saw a clear difference in who RB1 should be and who RB2 is, and that's Leonard Fournette at RB1.
The fumble ended his day and possibly ended his career. Leonard Fournette, we've been piping up all offseason. For our listeners, we really hope that you did not touch Ronald Jones with the 20 million foot pole. And the writing's written in stone at this point, because Leonard Fournette, if the Buccaneers know what's good for him, they're going to play Leonard Fournette from this point forward. And I don't see any way that they try to mix Ronald Jones back into this. Like, I guess there'll maybe be some weeks where Ronald Jones steals or a touchdown, but when you have that kind of talent on your roster and you have that kind of coaching staff, you're going to expect them to make the right decision. And when you go 12 for 103 and a touchdown, there's nothing else. Like, I think that's enough. That should be enough, you know, and Leonard Fournette is going to be your RB2. He's going to be your RB2. At the very least, try to sell Ronald Jones if you can. I highly doubt that you will. Like, this was just a matter of time before this was going to happen. We've been calling it all year long, and voila, it's here. It's happening, and it's fucking live. Let's fucking go, Bucks.
Yeah, after Ronald Jones fumbled, he trotted to the sideline. I was just sitting there thinking, like, fucking bury me, Lenny, bury me. And then guess what? He fucking buried him. Let's go.
Couldn't be more excited about that. Oh, it's awesome. I think I have Leonard Fournette in like 1 league, and I'm just fucking pumped about it because what he brings to fantasy.
I hate to root against the guy, but this is just one of those situations where we liked a guy more than the other. So, of course, we're going to be happy about it. Of course, we're going to take a victory lap on this. Like that's just going to happen here.
And it didn't happen because of an injury either.
No,
which I think is,
which is even better. Yeah.
The guys that are touting, don't draft CMC, shut the fuck up. All right. Moving on. Wide receivers. Calvin Ridley's been phenomenal this year. He had another great game last week. 7 catches for 109 yards, 2 touchdowns for Atlanta. It's weird. It's like, with the Julio hamstring thing that's going on and how huge of a lead that Atlanta had in this game, they were down against Seattle, and that's where you saw the production. It kind of shows that he can do it in either, you know, format of a game, whichever script it's flipped. Calvin Ridley's been wide fucking open all year long, it seems like. All year long. It's been 2 weeks. But I don't see that really changing either. Like, this offense is, the defense is so bad, they're going to be down in games. They're going to not pick up an onside kick. They're just a bad football team. And I think that works out perfectly for Matt Ryan and Calvin Ridley and company. Todd Gurley, if he could stay healthy, when we get to our start sit and rapid fire, you're just going to see we're starting everybody on the Atlanta offense, because every time it seems like it's going to be a shootout, or at least it looks like that for 2020.
Yeah, and partly it's because of their defense has been pretty shit. He's third in the league in receptions, first in receiving yards, third in completed air yards, first in total touchdowns. I mean, yeah, this guy's going to finish in the top 10. Like, he really is. I don't see anybody passing him up with all the injuries happening right now. He's just in too good of a situation for him to not succeed. He's a really good player. Julio Jones is dealing with a hamstring injury now that could end up lingering throughout the season, and we'll finally get to see if Calvin Ridley can be an alpha receiver. However, he's already doing that. He's already doing that with all the other weapons in this offense. I don't have a lot of Calvin Ridley, but I'm playing him everywhere in cash because it's almost a guaranteed smash every time I see a matchup on the board. And I don't think it matters who they play. They're going to throw a fuck ton, and he's going to be the beneficiary of that offense 100%.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about this more on Saturday when we do DFS stuff. But, I mean, he's all the way up to, I think, the third highest salaried wide receiver on the slate now. So, obviously, his price has gone way up. I do think he's benefited, and I'm jealous because of how much I like Christian Kirk. But Ridley's obviously benefited from drawing the number two coverage, and having Julio by his side. Julio's kind of got the tweaked hammy. Maybe Atlanta kind of knows that, like, Julio's hampered. We're not even really going to deal with him. He's almost out there as a decoy. I don't know. But regardless, Calvin Ridley's been balling.
The bad from last week was Allen Robinson. 3 receptions for 33 yards and 9 targets. We were hyping Allen Robinson up going into the week, playing a Giants secondary. Gave up 3 touchdowns, two of them to a wide receiver, one in Juju in week 1 on Monday night from Big Ben. 10 different receivers got involved in this game for Mitch Trubisky. David Montgomery led the team in yards, which was just weird. He had a huge day after landing on his neck when it was almost a really scary injury, came back into the game and was balling. But just kind of a weird start for Allen Robinson. And we actually, in our group text today for the pod, Bryce is like, what's up with Allen Robinson? Like, I'm kind of out on this. Like, I don't really, Mitch Trubisky is shit. It's not working. What's going on? And he has been bad, but Chase and I were kind of backing Allen in that Mitch has missed him on all these deep plays and the accuracy has been bad. And if Mitch can hit him like he has in years past, at least last year, over 1,100 yards, it's going to be good for him. So I think that eventually that happens. You could buy low on Allen Robinson. Shit, I just did. Just traded Juju for Allen Robinson in a league. You can take that risk if you want. My thought process is Mitch Trubisky is going to be bad. Allen Robinson's a really standout wide receiver on that team without much competition and should be targeted heavily. He has been, and I'm not really worried about the volume or them connecting eventually this season.
And in our conversation, you know, I own Allen Robinson in almost every goddamn league this year. So I'm really hoping that Kevin and Chase are right about this, but I'm playing devil's advocate in this situation because I don't want to gamble on Mitch Trubisky getting better. However, yeah, you're right. We have seen Allen Robinson while Mitch Trubisky is really bad. But is he worse this year through 2 weeks? I mean, it's hard to tell, right? It's only a couple weeks. You're just going to have to sit and be patient with Allen Robinson because you know what he's capable of doing. I think that it would be interesting to see what Nick Foles could do in that offense and what it would do for Allen Robinson. I can't imagine it would be worse for Allen Robinson. It's just it comes down to the quality of targets that Allen Robinson's receiving, because it's not the amount. The amount is fine. He's getting a ton of looks. It's just he's not getting the quality, and that's showing on his production. And I'm just I want to be optimistic, but I'm more skeptical because I don't think it's going to get better for Mitchell Trubisky. And regardless of the schedule, and I don't think that their schedule is incredibly difficult. I mean, they get they're going to get Atlanta this week, and that's going to help out Allen Robinson. But if it doesn't, I'm going to be worried. I think after 3 weeks, and Atlanta's the team where receivers are really taking advantage in fantasy and in real life football. You know, it's not like Detroit or the Giants were incredibly tough, a tough matchup for Allen Robinson and Mitchell Trubisky. So that's why I'm hesitant. It's short term. I'm a little nervous, but I'm going to obviously play it out. I'm still going to start him. You know, I'm not going to bench Allen Robinson. I just need to see him pop off in Atlanta before I feel a little bit better about his situation going forward.
I'm pissed because I took him on a prop bet over 5.5 receptions, which seems a little rich, but it was plus money. And a lesson learned. He had 3 receptions on 9 targets. So the volume was there. The 9 targets were there. But lesson learned, don't bet on anyone associated with Mitch Trubisky. But I'm working on a model based on target share and unrealized air yards to kind of target guys who are getting the targets and the air yards but haven't popped yet. And Allen Robinson is a guy that obviously keeps popping up in that for week 1 and week 2. But what it boils down to, again, is just it's not Allen Robinson's fault. It's Mr. Trubisky. He's been not good. And I'm continuing to be optimistic on Allen Robinson because of the matchup next week with Atlanta, who has yielded the quarterback 1 week, both weeks to Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott, and they can put makeup on a pig or however that saying goes. They can make
makeup on a pig.
Yeah, they can make shit smell good. And I'll go back to Allen Robinson again. He's 6,900 on FanDuel. And we'll turn that more now into a tournament play rather than a cash play.
Right.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I like that. Yeah, and I don't think you're going to see like 400 whatever yards that Dak just threw for, or the, you know, over 300 that Russ had for Mitch. But it's just the completions and getting a rhythm going and stuff. Like he hasn't done that yet with anybody. So I think that this is the week, especially with Atlanta, like you're saying, Chase. So fingers crossed for Allen, and I guess for Mitch Trubisky. Go Mitch. The good tight end, Tyler Higbee, 5 receptions, 54 yards, and 3 touchdowns. This was kind of like, that's the good tight end line, right? 5 for 54. That's perfect. That's what I'm looking for. And then just sprinkle in 3 touchdowns for a mega touchdown production week. Holy shit. 3 touchdowns against the Eagles? The Eagles are bad. The Eagles are really bad. Goff was actually throwing some good-looking passes to Mr. Higbee. This is just like...
Goff looks a little better. I don't know what it is.
No, I know he is. The Rams are good. I think people are going to say like, oh yeah, like he way overplayed, blah, blah, blah. Touchdowns just happen for tight ends. You just, like, regardless of that, if he didn't have any touchdowns, I still would have loved this line for him because that's what I'm looking for at a tight end. That's where I drafted a guy like Tyler Higbee or TJ Hockenson or the guy that we're going to talk about next that's been shit in the bed because of Adam Gase. You know, that's all I want. And then you throw in the 3 touchdowns and it wins you your week.
Yeah, I mean, look at Mark Andrews. Like, his matchup looked solid for him to have a great week too. And he didn't get the touchdown. And look, that's what happens. Like, that's how it works for tight ends, like you said. We've been waiting for this for Tyler Higbee. You know, I like Tyler Higbee. I think that when you go 5 weeks in a row with 100-plus yards last season, that you're a good tight end. And hopefully this game was the kind of eye-opening game for the Rams to kind of get him re-involved in the offense after the first 2 weeks, kind of just meh. He's not going to have 3 touchdowns a week. Don't expect that. But I think that we start seeing more targets go his way, especially in the red zone. He's just a big dude who is really good at football, and I think that guys like him and Hayden Hurst have been getting slammed all offseason. People want to make a case for why they're not great. It doesn't matter. They're in high volume passing offenses, and that's what matters. If they're not super freaky athletic, like, you don't really need to be super freaky athletic to be a fucking tight end. You just need to be open and good at catching the ball, and that's what Tyler Higbee is. I think we're going to see more of Tyler Higbee creeping into the top 10 as time goes on. And I'm glad that we finally got to see a little bit of that in week 3. I like the 5 receptions. I think that's probably a pretty realistic outcome for him going forward.
I gobbled him up in a lot of the dynasty startup drafts that I did this offseason, kind of stemming off the fumes of people saying that he's overrated, right? And he's only produced for, he's been in the league for a while and he's only now produced for six games last season, kind of the back end of last season when the Rams switched to 12 personnel. Well, the dude's balling out. I'm cautiously optimistic though with Higbee, because there isn't a single productivity metric that he is top 10 in other than touchdowns, where he's number one, but touchdowns make the tight end position. So no complaining here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like Eric Ebron's big season. I know it's early to say that, but Eric Ebron, when he had all those touchdowns, a red zone threat. So it kind of, it feels like that a little bit. And they're going to be running a lot of 12 personnel in LA. The bad was Chris Herndon. So if you guessed it by my teaser before, congratulations. He's fucking horrible this year. And is it his fault?
No,
it's not. One reception for 5 yards on 6 targets. And the crazy stat that was pulled is he's blocking on 36.4% of his passing down snaps, his passing attempts by Sam Darnold. 36.4 of those Herndon is blocking on. I don't know how he doesn't get involved in a game like this where they're down big. The Niners are blowing him out. Fucking Braxton Berrios is getting involved and Chris Herndon is not. Would argue that Chris Herndon is easily the best receiver on the field when a guy like Jamison Crowder is out, and all things considered, no Denzel Mims as well. It's just another testament to how bad it is for the New York Jets, how bad it is for Adam Gase, and how bad things are going for Sam Darnold. If you can't get an athlete and a great tight end that we see potential in, everybody sees potential in, I feel like, fantasy community and the NFL community, it's just not going to happen for Chris Herndon, I think.
It's not. I think Adam Gase is, oh my God, he's not going to be a coach for much longer. I can't imagine. I love the following every weekend's performance. He's like, he says something along the lines of, it's time to take the offense into overdrive.
Or, look out.
It's time to unleash Sam Darnold and his true potential. It's like, yeah, well, do it then. Like, you haven't done shit. He's riding the coattails of Peyton Manning. And the rest of the league is on board with that, except for the Jets, who wanted to pay him a fucking bajillion dollars to stay for however many years. I think it was like 8 years when they signed him. So I don't see Adam Gase as a coach much longer. There won't be another position for him after this, I don't think. Maybe as a coordinator, but like Chris Herndon had so much potential and should still have that potential in an offense where they have – Braxton Berrios catching the fucking ball, Chris Hogan catching the fucking ball. These guys are nobodies, and Chris Herndon is the most talented offensive weapon you have outside of, you know, Sam Darnold and Denzel Mims and Jamison Crowder. But Denzel Mims is hurt, Crowder's gone, this is your only guy left, and you refuse to use him in the offense. Like, is the blocking that bad to the point where you have to force this kind of player to block for you that much? I can't imagine the offensive line is that bad. So I think Herndon's droppable. Herndon is easily droppable at this point. I was playing him a little bit in cash here and there, but always try to find a way to get somebody else in at that position because, it's not going to be great for him going forward.
Yeah, we actually had Herndon in our cash lineup and then moved down, like, save $200 to Jonnu Smith, and that fucking paid off excellently. That was a smash. But no, and it's frustrating because these are in games that the Jets are getting smashed by or in passing opportunities, and Herndon is playing 70% of the snaps, and when he's on the field, like we talked about, he's blocking on 36%, which means he's participating on a route in 64% of their snaps with Le'Veon Bell out and Jamison Crowder out. He's clearly the best playmaker that they have, and he's got his fucking hand in the dirt. It's disgusting.
Really bad. Really bad. All right, so that's the good and the bad from last week. Those notable performances. We get into the injury news. On a week from hell, let's just say it was the 2020 of weeks that happened, and it was week 2, and we will remember it forever because of how decimating it was to nearly every team. I think every team lost somebody.
Were you really sick this week? What was the problem?
I broke my back.
What do you mean by that?
My back is broken.
What, a vertebrae or well, what portion?
Spinal.
First was Saquon Barkley, running back for the New York Jets, or New York Giants. Jeez, talk about the Jets so much. ACL out for the year is many of you already know, he signed Devonta Freeman earlier this week. Here's the situation I was thinking of. As we were talking about Aaron Jones, your season's probably saved if you also had Aaron Jones. If you had CMC and Aaron Jones, if you had Saquon and Aaron Jones, you're probably still okay. You can go on to waivers. You can get a Mike Davis. You can get somebody else to kind of fill in. But Saquon, obviously the biggest news of the week. The play before he tore his ACL, he kind of jammed his arm. Looked like it maybe hyperextended or up into his shoulder as he fell out of bounds. This landed goofy on it. Came out for a play, went right back in the next, and all hell breaks loose. And, you know, just that knee twist the wrong way. And amazing to see an incredible athlete like Saquon Barkley go down. And I don't mean amazing in a good way, but with how physically talented he is. And you see the work ethic, you see everything that guy does to prevent something like this, for it to happen. It just goes to show you that it can happen to anybody, even a superhuman like Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, it kind of feels like Dalvin Cook a little bit, where, you know, you have 2 years in a row where you're having a player deal with some sort of serious injury and having to wait for a third year, or in Saquon's case, a fourth year, to really show what he's capable of. And I don't like putting Saquon in that conversation with Dalvin. That doesn't make me feel good at all. And for one of the best athletes at the position to ever enter the NFL, and to have to go to a team like the Giants and then have to go through these types of injuries, like, God damn it. You know, he's a player that's great for the league, a player that's great for fantasy. And we just want to see him play. We just want to see him fucking play to his truest potential. And we've gotten a taste of it. We haven't gotten all of it. And we're going to have to wait another season to see it. They're dealing with another injury with Sterling Shepard. He's not going to play. He's on the injured reserve now. And so if you're going to play anybody on this offense, it's got to be Slayton and Evan Ingram. As much as I don't want to say Evan Ingram, you gotta consider it, because these are the only two guys left. And I'm not trying to pick up any Giants running backs. I'm out on Devonta Freeman. Go for it if you want. But I think this offense is a long fade, because – there's just not a lot to like at the moment.
Rolling through the injuries here. Chase, you got something on Jerick McKinnon, but what we saw in San Fran was Tevin Coleman go down. He's got a knee injury. He's on IR, injured reserve, for or at least 3 or 4 weeks. We saw Jimmy Garoppolo get hurt in that game as well. We saw Raheem Mostert go down with the MCL sprain. He likely won't play this week. So enter Jerick McKinnon and Jeff Wilson, this RBBC that they're calling Jeff Wilson the leader of, but we're leaning more towards Jet.
Yeah, Jerick McKinnon's your waiver wire pickup of the week. You know how this offense likes to run, and without a starting quarterback of really a whole lot of talent, I don't want to say Nick Mullins is bad, but he's not great either. They're going to hand the ball off, and Jerick McKinnon's going to be the beneficiary of that. He's been a very safe play at running back. He's getting you like 10 or 11 points a week. He's involved in the passing game more than he is running the ball, and that just creates a safe floor. He's the new James White, in my opinion. He's a really good athlete, and that shows on field. It's shown in the first 2 weeks, so scoop him up if you can, or if it's too late, then that sucks. Go try to get him. He's probably still fairly cheap.
So I'm going to be on the flip side, and really this is just pertaining to, again, we're going to talk about this more on Saturday, but everyone is going to rush on FanDuel and cash line ups and play Jerick McKinnon at 5,700. He's going to be the free square cash lineup maker, and I'm going to fade him because against Arizona, 3 carries, 3 receptions, 1 touchdown. They gave him 13.4 fantasy points without that touchdown. He scored 6 fantasy points against Arizona. And then last week against the Jets, 3 carries, 0 receptions, 1 touchdown. 13.7 yards. He had a random 55-yard run on 3rd and 31. He hasn't been healthy in 3 years now. Obviously, he's healthy. But Shanahan frustrates everyone historically using 3 and 4 running backs. His workload hasn't been there. I'm not sold that this is just going to be a dump it all on Jerick McKinnon game. Jeff Wilson Jr. is there. They're probably going to call up Jamichael Hasty from the practice squad, split carries that way. Just looking at what he's done the first 2 weeks, he's got 6 carries in 2 weeks. I just don't see them just working Jerick McKinnon. So mm-hmm. Am I going to play him a little bit? Yeah, probably. And I think he's a good flex play if you're super desperate. But for cash, kind of that free square, I'm going to look elsewhere.
I think especially because they play the Giants, right? What's crazy is they have to stay out there in New York. So the team went to West Virginia. They're staying at some huge ranch there. But then they have to go back to the field where they just lost like five guys in 1 week. And the NFLPA is actually looking at the turf because they said it felt sticky. So keep an eye on MetLife and the situation there on the turf and losing guys. Fly through these injuries now. Cortland Sutton, he tore his ACL. He's out for the year. Drew Locke, he landed on his shoulder. He's out at least a couple of weeks. So entered Driscoll and Judy into lead roles there. Paris Campbell out indefinitely. We thought he tore his ACL. Looks like it's just a PCL, MCL type of situation. Probably droppable in seasonal leagues. Hanging on to him, Dynasty, obviously. If you have a couple extra IR spots, throw him on there. The big news for RB1, Christian McCaffrey. He's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain. Probably going to want to get back sooner than that. And knowing the type of athlete he is, he will be. But I hope Carolina doesn't rush him back because this is an injury that we've seen with Kamara last season that just lingers. It just hangs around. So watch out for that. If you got McCaffrey, don't freak out too much yet. Davante Adams, he went out with a hamstring injury last week. After the huge week one and player of the week, he should be good to go for week three. The crazy story of the day that broke today, Tyrod Taylor and his lung injury because of the team doctor giving him a pain-killing injection before the game punctured his fucking lung. Are you kidding me? So no shit, Herbert found out right before. He's got fluid pumping into his lungs and going, why does my chest hurt so bad? So apparently it's all good. Like Anthony Lynn said, the doctor's like a good man and everything's fine. And it's just a big investigation in the NFL now. But Tyrod not playing this week because he has a hole in his fucking lung. Okay, final injury of the week was Julio Jones, and we kind of saw this maybe a little bit in week one, just maybe off the volume that he saw there, but he definitely tweaked something on that deep play down the middle of the field just off his fingertips as a hamstring injury that it maybe was led on a little bit to think that he was okay. But that's it for injuries in the fantasy world. I'm sure there were missing more. There were so many and too many to keep up with. Of course, all the defensive players that went down as well. Niners just absolutely decimated. So Chase's bet for the Niners to miss the playoffs, looking pretty good. Okay, that's last week. Let's get into rapid fire. Week three, let's go.
Miami at Jacksonville. Buffalo threw all over Miami last week in a game where a guy like Josh Allen finished with over 400 passing yards. Can we expect the same from Jacksonville? Yes and no. In this matchup, I think James Robinson is flirting with the set it and forget it territory after posting 100 yards against Tennessee. Chark is easily still worth the start as long as he's healthy, and Minshew should be highly considered at this point as well. For Miami, Devontae Parker is the only guy I'm looking at on this offense for week three.
The Texans travel to Pittsburgh, where the Pittsburgh D poses a scary threat, but I'm starting David Johnson off of pass catching abilities, Deshaun Watson, and Will Fuller, whose hammy issue has healed. On the other side, fire up Big Ben, Juju, target leader Deontay Johnson, and James Conner against Houston's 25th ranked defense. Benny Snell looked amazing in week one, but barely played any snaps after his second fumble. To the bench, Benny Snell goes.
Cincinnati at Philly, two of the league's best meet in Philly on Sunday morning. Will Cincinnati throw it 60 times again against the Eagles' fifth best pass defense? I'm starting Tyler Boyd, Joe Mixon, and no Burrow just yet. AJ Green goes to my bench as well. For Philly, I'm starting Miles Sanders with confidence versus the poorest Bengals run D, along with Zach Ertz, given that Jalen Reagor is out for some time. Sit Wentz and sit DeSean Jackson.
Niners at Giants. Who the fuck still plays for the 49ers? Please, someone tell me. Oh, wait, I know. Jerick the Jet McKinnon, that's who. In addition, if George Kittle plays, he starts in your lineup as well. As for the Giants, it gets a little more tricky with Saquon and Sterling Shepard out. Slayton was a dud last week, but with more and more targets becoming available, I'd look at him and Evan Ingram to have bounce back weeks. However, I'd strongly advise you to avoid playing Daniel Jones. He hasn't really been playable.
The Raiders head east in a battle with the Patriots. Pretty simple fantasy game here, as Jacobs and Waller are the only viable green lights for the Raiders. While for New England, Cam, Julian Edelman, and co-target leader N'Keal Harry have earned spots in your lineup against the Raiders' 30th ranked defense.
Tennessee heads to Minnesota, where one of the best running teams meets one of the worst teams. Minnesota is the worst team. Start the Titan himself, Derrick Henry, who makes the 28th best team in stopping the run. Not good. Jonnu Smith and Ryan Tannehill are starts as well. A.J. Brown did not practice today. He's likely out for Sunday. For the Vikings, start Dalvin and Thielen based on sheer volume alone. Sit, drop, cut, Kirk after his disastrous performance in Indy.
Washington at Cleveland. Damn, was it nice to see Terry McLaurin dominate again. Am I right? I guess the question remains, is there anyone else on the team worth playing? The short answer is no, so I'm going to leave it at that. For Cleveland, now that we've seen things turn around slightly, I think I'd still only play Chubb and Hunt. Washington has a solid pass rush, and I'm still not sold on Baker under pressure. And it's very likely OBJ is affected by this as well.
2-0 Rams, 2-0 Bills in Buffalo. Don't be scared of Goff. Fitzpatrick threw 328 yards and 22 fantasy points against this Buffalo defense last week. That means start Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, and Tyler Higbee too. The backfield is a little murky, but Daryl Henderson put up 121 total yards last week and deserves flex consideration. For the Bills, start Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, John Brown, and Devin Singletary with Zach Moss nursing a toe injury.
Chicago at Atlanta. Bears beats Atlanta Falcons pass attack. This is the Allen Robinson week. After giving up 8 billion yards to the Seahawks and Cowboys, it's Mitch Trubisky's turn. Start him. A-Rob and Fantasy Surprise David Montgomery in your lineups as well. For the Falcons, plug Matt Ryan, Calvin Ridley, Julio, Gurley, and Hurst as starters in the potential shootout yet again.
Carolina Panthers at Los Angeles Chargers. It's going to be very difficult wanting to start any Panther players for Week 3 against the Chargers, but DJ Moore will always be considered a safe play regardless. For the Chargers, you could take a gamble on any number of players, but the safe picks for now are Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler, Joshua Kelly, and I'd even consider throwing Hunter Henry into the mix with Justin Herbert back in as the starting quarterback.
The New York Gaces travel to Indy to take on the Colts, and there seriously shouldn't be a single Jet in your lineup. Fire Adam Gase. For the Colts, Phillip Rivers is a safe start as a streamer and in two quarterback leagues. Smash Jonathan Taylor. T.Y. Hilton is popping up in my model for week 3, especially with Paris Campbell out, and damn, Mo Alley Cox balled out with Jack Doyle out, who still isn't practicing.
Dallas at Seattle. I know the game of the week is Monday, but this game could see over 90 points. Starting for Seattle, it's all the big names. Russ, Lockett, DK, Carson. For Dallas, the same thing. Dak, Zeke, Amari, CeeDee, Gallup in the flex. I think this might be the game for Michael Gallup. Shows up thanks to Seattle's Weenie Hutt Jr. pass rush. Dallas ranks 23rd in pass yards allowed, while Seattle ranks dead last versus two of the league's best offenses.
Tampa Bay at Denver. Playing Denver at home is never an easy task, but now it's easier than ever given the many injuries they've suffered this season. For the Bucs, Godwin should be back, Evans is an easy play, and as we predicted, it's Leonard Fournette season, so he should never see your bench again after his killer performance last week. For Denver, play Judy, who's now the primary pass catcher while avoiding Melvin Gordon against the top-notch Tampa Bay D-line, unless you have nothing else to play. If you're feeling bold and ballsy, KJ Hamler is expected to have an increased role. He could, at any point, pop off for a deep touchdown with his 4-3 speed.
The Lions head to the Arizona desert for a game that could produce a lot of fireworks. Kenny G is back and ready to go. Play him. Play Matt Stafford. Play TJ Hockenson. And play my sleeper of the week, DeAndre Swift, who had 5 receptions last week in this shootout. For the Cardinals, Kyler Murray could be this week's QB1. You're auto-starting DeAndre Hopkins and Kenyon Drake, and I'm finally ready for the Christian Kirk breakthrough as he leads the league in average target distance.
Green Bay at New Orleans, Sunday Night Football. Hard to believe that this might be the third most anticipated game of the week. Green Bay's electrifying offense meets a New Orleans team looking to bounce back at home. Rodgers, Aaron Jones, Davante Adams are all starters for me. Old Man Breeze, Kamara, Sanders, Traquan Smith should all be in lineups as long as Michael Thomas is out.
KC at Baltimore. One of the most anticipated games of the year is upon us, but who exactly comes out on top? We'll have to wait until Monday to find out, but in the meantime, who do we not start in a game where we expect a ton of points scored? For KC, I'm playing everyone except Hardman and Sammy Watkins. Clyde Edwards-Helaire would be someone I would sit with how tough Baltimore's defense is. However, I doubt you have replacements you'd be willing to start instead. For Baltimore, I'd avoid Edwards and Dobbins. There just isn't any point in trying to roll the dice on anyone except Mark Ingram at this point.
Rapid fire! Woo! Week 3. It's going to be a good one. Before we close out the show, I got some questions from IG to roll pie, you guys. Number one. Rest of season in all formats, Jonathan Taylor or CEH You know who I'm picking, so I'm just going to shut the fuck up.
I mean, I think it's Jonathan Taylor still, right? I don't know why I said still. Clyde's been fine. But Jonathan Taylor, he's going to get way more touches than Clyde will on a week-to-week basis. And with the athlete that Jonathan Taylor is, it's just too easy to want to play him. And then you have Clyde who, like I said, is going up against Baltimore this week. So that's kind of scary. I don't know what he does in that game. But Jonathan Taylor is just such an easy player to set and forget. Like, just don't overthink that one. He's a very easy play.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat too. Kind of off that guaranteed volume. But gosh, I do think it depends.
It does.
I do think it depends on format. But
I mean, he's been involved in the passing game. You know what I mean? Like, it's just he's going to carry
more involved than Clyde.
Yeah, he's more involved than Clyde in every aspect. You know, and that's what matters here. We preach in and out. Volume matters when it comes to running backs. And with Paris Campbell out, they just have one less reliable guy to go to in that offense. Jonathan Taylor, once again, is the guy.
Our buddy Tim Hawkins writes in, Rodgers versus the Saints or Cam versus Las Vegas? That's a tough one. And a good problem to have, for sure. And then kind of combined in that, should I cash in and trade Rodgers or Cam after their hot starts? Almost like, hey, I got some other holes I got to fill. Maybe at a running back go down. Maybe it's somebody like Christian McCaffrey he had go down. I know this because it's literally in my fucking league. So I'll let you guys talk about it. And you guys can give Tom a little bit of advice here.
Hey, Tom, how's it going, buddy? If Devontae Adams is not playing, I'm going Cam. He's turned into a pretty safe quarterback play with the rushing upside. And I think that Las Vegas, as well as they played on Monday night against the Saints, the defense is still vulnerable. And Cam Newton is going to take advantage of that. And I think that Rodgers, as great as he is, if he doesn't have Devontae Adams, there's just a lot more risk involved in that matchup. So I'm going to go Cam because it's the safer play with some quality upside there as well. He could run in a touchdown, and that immediately makes him more valuable than Rodgers. And if you had to pick for the rest of the season, I still think it's Rodgers. But once again, it comes down to whether or not Devontae Adams plays, because if he doesn't play, I'm not that confident in the other receiving options on that team.
For next week, it's play Cam Newton, just purely based off the matchup. Cam Newton does not play for Carolina. Cam Newton plays for New England. New England is playing against the Raiders, and we talked about how they have the 30th ranked defense. There's going to be goal line opportunities. There's going to be red zone opportunities for Cam. Smash Cam Newton. That, and then moving forward, they're so back-to-back to me, I would trade whatever guy you don't like, honestly. They're like 9-10. I couldn't even pick one. So
I would trade Rodgers just based off the name value. I don't think people there are people that are gonna hate Cam Newton, right?
I mean, Cam pops off again. I see a world where Cam finishes top five in rushing touchdowns this year. Every time they get to the goal line, and that team gets the goal line a ton.
Yeah.
As we've seen through two games, he's falling in the end zone. And then he's not falling in the end zone. He's falling on his fucking head with the game on the line because Seattle actually got a stop.
You know,
so I'm taking Cam. Like, I want Cam in leagues. The rushing upside is so there. And then he just showed off that when he has a clean pocket against Seattle's horrible pass rush, he's really good.
Guy that slides under the radar every year, Julian Edelman's been phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Yeah. You gotta love that.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Looks like we were on Julian Edelman or something at wide receiver 35. I don't know. You guys remember that?
I think I do. Yeah.
That's where we rewind. Bryce, can you do that?
Right.
Hey, take Julian Edelman in round 7 of your. Okay. That's the show. Week 3. God, I can't wait. Every time we do the show on a Wednesday, I just get so gassed up for football, man. We got a shitter of a game tomorrow night or tonight when you're listening to this with Miami and Jacksonville. But there's some fantasy there. You got Chark. You got LaVisca. You got Gardner Minshew.
James Robinson.
Devontae Parker. James Robinson. Preston Williams. See, there's some names.
Yeah.
This matchup's getting better. In years past, I remember it was just
The Thursday night games I haven't been excited for every week, and they end up turning out to be pretty good. You know,
week one it was Houston KC.
So. Right, and last week, yeah, that's true. I don't know why I blanked that, but last week I was not excited for Cleveland and Cincinnati, and that ended up being a fun game to watch. I was down with that.
If you've made it this far into the show, we're switching things up. You'd be like, oh my God, I had my pen and paper out. I was ready to write down all the DFS stuff. Stop it. Put it away. You're done. We're done with that. We're not doing that on Wednesdays anymore because it doesn't make any sense. What are we doing? Well, let me tell you guys, on Saturday, look for a show. We're going to record it in the morning or on Friday. Probably not Friday because it's Friday. We want to take a little break. But we'll record it on Saturday, get it out to you on Saturday. You can listen to it on Sunday morning as you're making your lineups for FanDuel and getting ready for DFS. But it just makes a lot more sense to do it that way to make you guys some money. Making picks on Wednesday, like we saw today, like news changes all the time. Guys get hurt in practice. Things get moved around. It just doesn't make sense.
And one really quick thing to add, this show's going to be relaxed on Saturday. We're here to have a good time for that show. And me, Chase, and Kevin, when he wants to be available for that, we're just gonna dig through all the players. We're gonna casually talk about it. It's gonna be a lot more of a roundtable discussion. It's not gonna be so structured. So you can have it all in the background. You can hear us talk about some guys, and what we're just gonna try to make good lineups. It's gonna be a good time.
Gonna dig through some props too. Look through the DraftKings sportbook, FanDuel sportbook, and for those who are in Oregon. The Oregon Scoreboard app also offers fun props to play with.
I could see it now. I'm sitting down. I have my robe on. I'm watching the pregame. I got my AirPods in on Sunday morning, and I'm listening to the Tutty Talk guys win me some money. Doesn't that just sound great?
It does, and we've been winning consistently through 2 weeks, so we're legit now, and one of these days we'll win a million. And you know,
and then we'll never do the show again.
Yeah, we're retiring. We're done.
And for the Thursday game, one of our favorite guys, Laviska Shenault.
Mm.
Yeah,
32.5 receiving yards. Take the over. DJ Chark is questionable. Byron Jones, the Dolphins' number one corner, is out. They have a safety who is out, and we are smashing Laviska Shenault over 32.5 on Thursday.
Get him, bring me my money. That's it. That's the show. Week 3 coming at you. DFS coming at you soon. Stay tuned for that. Follow us at Tutty Talk on social media, Twitter and Instagram. Get involved. Like our content. Comment on stuff. Let's get the conversation going. The season's just getting started, boys. We're not even a quarter of the way through this bitch. It's awesome. We're going to get through these injuries. We'll hold each other together. Keep our family together. Let's go, week 3. Tutty Talk.